Greetings and welcome all you Commanders, Eagles, and Angels. This is Rainbird, and I'm pleased to welcome you to Tara and Rama's Hard News on Friday nights. We're grateful that you're joining us here tonight. And we'd like to take a few minutes to set the tone for the evening and go into a good space in our hearts. So let's take a few gentle breaths. Breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, slowly, gently. Let go of that dross of the day. As we go into our heart space, let us gather with our guides and guardians, our totems, our spirit teams, our ancestors, whoever you like to journey with that kimi drum with. And there's a council fire. It's in the center. So let's gather around this council fire. It's a virtual council fire. And so let's do that in that virtual way that we know how to do. Come in close. As we call in the seven galactic directions in the Mayan tradition, we welcome from the east, the House of Light. May wisdom open in the dawn that is upon us, so that we may see things clearly. And we welcome from the north, the House of Night. May wisdom mature among us, so that we may see everything from within. We welcome from the West, the House of Transformation. May wisdom be transformed into right action, so that we might accomplish what must be done. We greet from the south, the house of eternal sun. May right action give us the harvest, so that we might enjoy the fruits of the planetary being. We welcome from above, the house of paradise, where the star people and the ancestors gather. May their blessings reach us now. And we greet from below, the house of the earth. May the beating of the crystal planet's heart bless us with its harmonies, so that we might end war. We welcome from the center, source of the galaxy, which is everywhere at once. May everything be recognized as the light of mutual love. Ayam, Hunapku, Even Maya, Imaho. Ayam, Hunapku, Even Maya, Imaho. Ayam, Hunapku, Even Maya, Imaho. All hail the harmony of mind and nature. us to stay wherever that drumbeat took us, as we take a few minutes to take a look at the Mayan record of days for today and for ahead. And today we begin a new wave, and it's the red magnetic moon. It's a one look. So this moon wave is the time to consider these 13 days as a period of purification with that moon energy. And we have the mantra for today for this and for this wave. So the keywords for the magnetic tone is attracting, purpose, and unify. It's tone one. In Muluk, for that solar glyph, the key words are purify, flow, universal water. It's the moon. So here's the mantra. I unify in order to purify, attracting flow. I seal the process of universal water with the magnetic tone of purpose. I am guided by the power of my own power doubled. So it's devil moon energy. And we have that destiny pattern today, the analog or our teacher or our, helper is Ox, the dog, that unconditional love. And our challenge teacher today is the storm, Kawak. So, lighting clear thought. So, our occult destiny for today is Eb, which is the human. And that's it. That's what we're working with tonight. We're working with that human energy as our occult guide and our spirit guide. And so there you go. And then, of course, it's a double Muluk day with that one tone. So we're working with that Muluk energy. Let's look at Muluk a little bit more. It's the moon, and it's an artist aspect. And it's about that wise use of our rational mind. It's about accepting spirit's direction. So we listen and we embrace these gifts of having that contact with spirit and remembering what we came here to do. So with this energy, universal mind is our mind, and we have this energy for the whole wave. It is the first tone. And so we're using our telepathy, and we're doing that purification that we do with this, the moon energy. So let's let go of any insensitivity, any attachment to omens, and let go of any self-doubt as we embrace these energies for this day and for the 13 days to come as they guide that. And then moving on to Saturday. Saturday and Sunday are both portal days. And so Saturday is the Ock, and it would be the lunar Ock, a 2 Ock, and it's a white lunar dog. And so this dog energy is an artist aspect, and it's about unconditional love. It's about healing the pain of the past. So we embrace these gifts of having that contact with our spirit guides and awareness of our destiny, our awareness of our past lives, and that loyalty we have to humankind. So let's let go of any fears, any unwise use of anger, no growling, as we embrace these energies on Saturday. And that's a portal day, so it's extra dimensional, extra powerful. And then moving on to Sunday, it's a 3 chewing, the electric monkey. And this is another artist aspect. So we're working with balancing work and play. We're working with that attention to clarity of mind and that wise use of magical artistry. So let's embrace these gifts of innocence and spontaneity, that ability to play and laugh and enjoy ourselves and our company as we let go of any insensitivity or any jadedness, any resistance to compassion, and let go of any mistrust. As we embrace these energies on Sunday, and it's also a portal day, so we're working with that extra-dimensionally, multidimensionally energy. And then moving on to Monday, is the yellow self-existing human for Ebb. And Ebb is a healing aspect. It's the human. And our work with Ebb is enlightenment of humankind. So we activate cosmic consciousness with this energy as we attune to spirit. We embrace these gifts of being that human servant warrior, the gift of abundance, the gift of our contact with other dimensions. So let's let go of any dependence on the analytical mind as we embrace these energies on Monday, the self-existing human. And then going on to Tuesday, it's a 5-band, the red overtone Skywalker. So that overtone is an activation tone, as like like making that pyramid, the top of the pyramid, and making that reactor with all the energy. So it's a very powerful tone, and it's also the harmonic. So we're working with Ben, the red Skywalker, in the. Ben is a warrior aspect, so we're working with focus, we're working with striving towards self-illumination, we're working with clarity. So let's embrace these gifts of having that strength and that ability to bend dimensions as we let go of any resistance to faith or any belief in aloneness. We embrace these energies on Tuesdays. And then moving along to Wednesday, it's a 6-ish, the white rhythmic wizard is a visionary aspect. And our work with the wizard is that illumination for others and that having that clarity of mind and purpose. So we embrace these gifts of the shaman, the jaguar medicine, that the gift of integrity and that working in accordance with divine will. So let's let go of any control or personal power issues or any manipulation as we embrace these energies on Wednesday. And in the calendar day, it is an ember day, so this is a good day to let go of what no longer serves us. It will leave. That ember day is those days are the days that we can get rid of things and keep them gone. So we do that as we weed the garden of our life. And then moving on to Thursday, it's a 7-man, the blue resonant eagle, which is a visionary aspect, and it's that blue eagle. So, and it is a full moon. That full moon is at 7:53 a.m. Eastern Time. And so let's, oh, and it is where? In Libra? No. Sag. Now I don't know. Oh, it must be in Sag. Yeah. As Sagittarius. So let's look at the eagle energy a bit. It's a visionary aspect. It's about our commitment to service and moving consciousness to source. It's about reconnecting with all creation as we see that big picture. Let us embrace the gifts of independence and that belief in ourselves. And let's let go of any feelings of despair or any dissociation. And let go of that illusion of separateness. As we embrace these energies on Thursday, on that full moon day. And then on Friday, when we come back, it'll be an 8-keeb. That's the yellow galactic warrior. And it's also another ember day. So again, it's a good time to get rid of what no longer serves us. Weed that garden. It's warrior aspect. And we trust in our journey, and we bring awareness of right action with this energy. So let's embrace the gifts of the warrior, that communication with the divine, that access to cosmic consciousness. As we let go of any limitation, any restriction or hesitation, we embrace these energies, and we'll talk about it some more next Friday when we get back. So let's take a few moments as I change my hat and do the housekeeping. As we are a listener-supported radio program, it's all of us that make it happen. Each week we have a commitment with BBS Radio for our services with them. And we're still behind because we've been catching up on bills, and we're close to that. So we can focus this week on catching up with our BBS Radio commitment. So what we need is $1,275 to get caught up with this weekend. And so here's how we do it. We go into our heart space, see what is ours to give, and then go to bbsradio.com. And click on Radio Station 1, and you'll see listed at the 8 o'clock hour of this program, The Hard News on Friday Nights with Tyron Rama. And as you click on that, and that's on the schedule, you see that right away. When you're on the homepage at bbsradio.com, you'll see the schedule, the first thing. So the schedule has Radio Station 1, Radio Station 2. So we're on Radio Station 1. On Friday nights, The Hard News on Friday Nights with Tara and Rama. And as you click on that icon that's there, it takes you directly to our account with BBS Radio, where you can use your bank card and make a donation in any amount. So thank you for taking that action. We have a program on Thursday nights as well. It's a night at the round table with the panel, and there's an icon there, and you can click on that. As you see that listing on Thursdays at the 8 o'clock hour. These are central times. So on Saturdays, Radio Station 2, we have the True History, Herstory, and Nisera, and our Galactic Origins with Tara and Rama at the 3:30 hour on that listing. And as you click on that icon there, that takes you to our account, use your bank card, make that donation, and encourage others to do the same. Spread the word. Let people know that this program is here. As more people can contribute, and whatever you can contribute is fine. Just do what you can. Let's get caught up. Just do it regularly. Do it every day. So 13 thank yous and honey in the heart. We're so grateful for all the ways that you show up. We're grateful for BBS Radio, and we're grateful for all of you that come here as a family each week and do the work that we do. We are so grateful for all of you. So thank you. And we're also assisting Tara and Rama with their needs. They just have one bill, other than ET, that they still owe $200 to. It'd be good to work on that. They have the gas bill, which is $36.32 to pay. And then they need basics. They need money for food and gas. And basics, you know, kitty litter and things like that. So thank you for your generosity. Thank you for assisting Tara and Rama with their needs. Here's how we do it. You want to go to the rainbowroundtable.net, the website for Rainbow Roundtable. And there on the homepage, on the right-hand side on your computer screen, you'll see at the bar across the top a donate link. Click on that. That takes you to the Rainbow Roundtable PayPal account. If you have a menu grid to use, click on that. The menu that drops down will be near the bottom of that list. And it's a donate link. Click on that. That takes you to that PayPal account. And there you can make that donation in any amount. You want to send money. So you click on send. You hit the search window. You put in who you want to send it to. You put in this address, Koran, K-O-R-A-N, 9999, at hotmail.com. And that's the Rainbow Roundtable PayPal site. So the next window, you put that address in, and I'll say it again, because this is the address you need for there. Koran, K-O-R-A-N, 9999. At hotmail.com. And then as you do that, you'll get a question, what is this for? And you just put in their gift or donation, either one. And then you can click on send. And actually, the last time I did it, there's a page that comes up that says, is this for goods or services, or is it for friends and family? And you just click on friends and family when that window comes up. So that came up before the send button. So there you go. That's how you get to friends and family, is by putting in that email address. And I'll give it again, Karan9999@hotmail.com. So as you're sending something, please let Rama know his email address, for letting him know that what you sent, when you sent it. Karan99939@comcast.net. And just shoot him an email, let him know what you sent and when you sent it, so he knows to look and plan his day. So there you go. I'll say it again. Rama's email, Karan999@comcast.net. And also there's a mailing address that you need it. It is Ram D. Berkowitz, R-A-M. D. Berkowitz, B-E-R-K-O-W-I-T-Z, Post Office Box 280-280, and that's in Santa Cruz, New Mexico, the zip code 87567. I'll say it again, Post Office Box 280, Santa Cruz, New Mexico, 87567. So there you have it, all the information. Thank you for taking that action. We're so grateful for all that Tara and Rama do. And it's an opportunity and an honor to pay it forward and support the work that's being done here with all of you and how we come together. And so 13 thank yous, honey, in the heart. And I'm passing this talking stick. And it's got lots of fairies and feathers and lots of little people, and it has that Excalibur sort of truth and rainbows, serpent feathered one. And it's got lots of magical people. It's got the unicorns and the dragons right with it, and all the menahunis and the gnomes and the dwarves and the elves and all the elementals and all the rays of the rainbow. And there's just all kinds of rays of the rainbow. These solar flares are still making these auroras. So greetings, Tara and Rama. Welcome.
Thank you. Greetings.
Greetings. Thank you, Rainbird. Thank you, everyone. We are so grateful for you to be here with us.
We've got pretty warm weather here. Well, I don't know what the temperature is. It's in the 70s or maybe the, 70s, right?
Yeah.
High 70s. Mm. I'm just saying that we're heading towards... Well, this is May, another month. We're at summer.
Mm.
My God. In this really good, let's enjoy the beautiful weather we got. We're planting some marigolds and a few little garden things this week. And yesterday there was a rainout day, I guess is what we could call it, in Houston. So everything's changed now. I know that earlier Don said it was 93 degrees in Houston and partly sunny. So things change quite amazingly each day. Rama, you want to share anything that you learned today and yesterday?
Just that things are getting better and brighter each day, in spite of all the other crazy stories going on that I don't even have words to describe, because it's It's a most unique moment in the planet's story, because we can change this in the twinkling of an eye, and love is the answer. Yeah, that's the furthest thing that's going on right now in the stories across the planet. It's
going to testify.
I don't even know how to describe it, because it is beyond lunacy. It's...
Yeah, everything that's going on in that Congress. MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and AOC had it out in Congress. Was it last night?
I don't know. I just know they're not... They're not logical on any level.
No.
And emotions are getting in the way, and, oh, God. I saw something on Twitter where in Taiwan there was a knockdown, drag-out fight in their, I guess, the equivalent of their Congress or their Parliament, and it's the energies that are pouring in that we have to embrace them. It's like, if we want to live, we better embrace these energies, because it's that radical.
It's not a threat that you're going to die. It's just the energies keep going higher, and it does require to focus on a higher spiritual path.
Yes.
Otherwise, you get really instant, you might say, karma.
Yes.
Anyway, it's strong. It's saying no more of that.
Yeah.
We're doing this now. And yesterday, I'm just going to read yesterday's update. This is for Thursday, the 16th of May, yesterday. This is Rama speaking. He says, I sat with 6 deer and 10 crows off the road in the forest on the way through to Suki in Santa Fe at 10:48 a.m. mid-morning. I was able to get a picture of one of the little fawns in this herd of deer. And the picture's in there. Penny put it in there. Really sweet little fawn. Yes. They intuitively said to me, Lord Rama, more big energies are coming in. Stay safe. Stay in your heart. Then I received a text message from Heidi. This goes way back to 93.
Yeah.
93 to 99. And she worked at the Bank of International Settlements in Geneva, Switzerland. And Lady Nada, and who else was working with her?
Catherine.
Catherine.
Yeah.
Catherine works with the King of Swords.
Yes, in London.
Yes. Those three. Anyway, I was able to get a picture of one of the little fawns in this herd of deer. They intuitively said to me, Lord Rama, more big energies are coming in. Stay safe. Stay in your heart. Then I received a text message from Heidi, still in Tunsbury, Norway, near the Rainbow Bridge, which goes to Asgard, home of Thor, his father Odin, and his mother Frigga. Heidi... her mother, right?
No.
Okay. Home of Thor, his father Odin, and his mother Frigga. Thor's mother, Frigga. Heidi used to work at the Bank of International Settlements in Geneva, Switzerland, way back in 93 to 99. She said to me, Lord Rama, we are in a very extraordinary time. It is about this very ancient story of war in heaven, simultaneously with a war on earth. At this present moment, we are in a new timeline. We are in heaven on earth. What is about to happen is all the ancient treasures are being brought forth to help the people of earth at this present moment. For instance, there are ancient rooms of treasures under the Giza Plateau discovered in the past, yet never made public in the mass media of today. There are places in the city of Palmyra, Syria, where one of the stargates resides, where members of the Ashtar Command are coming to Earth through that stargate, that particular one. Right, Rama?
Yes.
They are anchored in Syria now to assist people of the Middle East, mainly the people of Gaza. Meanwhile, the massive solar flares continue to flow in. We have one. Remember that. See you in the light of the most radiant one. Satnam Namaste. Blaze the violet fire. It's really important to remember that we're on the other side of this, and we have won. And send more love to all the crazy things going on. Otherwise, right, Rama?
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to go for today. The message for today. This is Rama. I sat with 7 deer, 4 crows, and 2 calico cats halfway up Sun Mountain off the road in the forest at 10:49 a.m. mid-morning. They intuitively said to me, Lord Rama, again, big energies continue to flow in. Go and sit by the river. Did you do that?
Yes.
All right. How was it?
Very good. Just, I wanted to just hang out there for hours, but, I had to do things to come here.
So it was nice and peaceful. And
yes.
In the nature, yeah.
Yeah.
Then I received a text message from Julie, a friend of number 15.
Julio.
I'm sorry, Julio. Sorry. Yes, J-U-L-I-O, a friend of number 15. He did a mind meld. Or number 15 can do a mind meld with the King of Swords.
Yeah, he did.
And after that was a 5-minute little time together, he would hold one hand to the side of the King's head. And after that was finished, the King of Swords knew how to read, write, and translate and speak 23 languages.
Yes.
That's the kind of energy that number 15 represents, helping increasing the potential for the light to come in with all these people learning these things and having them be part of their lives. So, again, a text message from Julio, a friend of number 15. Rama received a text there from him at 11:29 a.m. late this morning. Julio is a treasure hunter who lives in Jamaica, and he is a Faction 3 White Knight. He said to me, Lord Rama, the energies that are coming in right now from the solar flares and the plasma rainbow rays, they are the highest energies cosmic law will allow for the moments that we are in. What has been going on for a long time, yet has been going on behind the scenes, is now coming forward in a stronger way. It is the wisdom of the quantum field and how we are all entangled in it. As we do our sadhana and our greater spiritual work, collective spiritual work, we become more connected to each other at the fifth dimensional level and higher. Our greatest task at this time is to untangle ourselves from the matrix, from these lower energies, and focus more and more on the ascension energies coming in now at quantum light speed. May the force be with you. Sat Nam, namaste, and blaze a violet fire. So you want to play that piece? It's a short piece, but...
Yeah, 4 minutes.
We can play. This is a 4-minute aurora ray piece.
Here we go.
Here we go.
As Earth undergoes a remarkable transition, benevolent beings from higher realms are working behind the scenes to ensure humanity's spiritual evolution unfolds smoothly. Known as the Galactic Federation, the Ascended Masters, and the Angelic Realm, these light forces have our highest good in mind. The Galactic Federation is an assembly of highly evolved civilizations from various star systems and galaxies who have come together to assist planets going through major energetic shifts. They use advanced technologies and spiritual powers to regulate the influx of cosmic energies to prevent disruption or chaos. The Ascended Masters are enlightened beings who once lived on Earth and have now transcended into the higher dimensions. These include figures like Jesus, Buddha, Mother Mary, Kuan Yin, Saint Germain, and Kuthumi. They work closely with the Galactic Federation, overseeing humanity's spiritual advancement. The angelic realm consists of beings created from divine light who act as messengers and intermediaries between heaven and earth. Archangels like Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel direct legions of angels to touch human hearts and inspire spiritual awakening. These angelic forces amplify thoughts and feelings of love, peace, hope, and goodwill among humanity. Their gentle guidance and intervention help smooth out Earth's transition process. Together, the Galactic Federation, Ascended Masters, and angelic hierarchy form an alliance of divine light working for humanity's highest good. As we undergo our collective initiation into higher states of consciousness, these compassionate beings are here to assist in any way they can while still honoring our free will. Their subtle influence and care are helping humanity transcend into a spiritually enlightened civilization, creating a paradise on Earth. Signs of the shift. We are living in remarkable times, and there are many signs indicating that a great shift in human consciousness is underway. While the changes may seem chaotic and confusing on the surface, there is an underlying awakening happening across the planet. Here are some of the key signs of this shift: social and political upheaval. All around the world, long-standing institutions are being challenged and revised. Outdated systems and structures can no longer contain our expanding awareness. People are standing up and demanding change. There is unrest and activism against the status quo. While this leads to turmoil in the short term, it is a sign of the emerging new era. Increased focus on climate change. As our thinking expands, our concern for the well-being of the planet increases. The younger generation in particular is committed to living in harmony with nature and protecting the environment. There are more calls to action regarding issues like global warming, pollution, sustainability, and conservation. This shows our understanding that the planet is a living, conscious being. Rise in spirituality and consciousness. People everywhere are experiencing a deep yearning for meaning, purpose, and connection beyond the material world. Many are awakening to deeper truths about life and reality. There is greater interest in meditation, yoga, energy healing, and metaphysics. People are questioning mainstream narratives and seeking higher wisdom. Breakdown of old systems. The monetary system, healthcare, education, media, and other defining pillars of society are struggling to maintain themselves. As our awareness shifts, we realize just how broken and outdated many of our systems are. This breakdown is a necessary step to make way for new systems aligned with higher values. Greater sense of oneness. As consciousness expands, so does our sense of connection with all of life. There is less identification with race, nationality, and other external labels. People are uniting and bridging divides. There is more compassion, empathy, and desire to help others as we begin to see ourselves in each other. Acceleration of technology. Technology is advancing at an exponential rate, particularly with communication and information sharing. This connects us globally and provides greater access to knowledge and ideas. Things once hidden are coming to light. Technology is a reflection of our creative potential as we move into higher consciousness. Though it can be hard to make sense of it all, have faith that these changes are paving the way for a new era of peace, unity, compassion, and harmony on our planet. A great awakening is unfolding. We love you dearly. We are here with you. We are your family of light. We are the Galactic Federation. Aho Aurora Ray, Ambassador of the Galactic Federation.
Okay, that was highly concentrated, higher spiritual energies.
Yes.
That was just what we were being told. Many people are choosing to go over the rainbow.
Yeah, this time we're in right now, it is very intense with so many souls crossing over every single day. I'm deeply aware of it. It affects me, and I have to send more love. I choose to send more love. It's a challenge at times because, you know, I go through my periods where I cry oceans of tears for what's going on because the people that make our so-called laws, they're insane. They are illogical, as Spock would say. They're not coming from the heart.
The Republicans in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And both sides of the coin are bought. It's a deal.
Yes. Yet there's this tremendous higher fifth dimensional energy coming in to help people, to help the whole of society to wake up.
Indeed.
And it's moving very, very, very quickly. I mean, the weather was dramatically warmer today than any time before now. Today was...
Yes.
Did we get to 80-something?
I think it hit 80.
It did. I think so, too. And it feels like the summer coming.
Yeah.
Very quickly. What else, Rama? What else? Yes. I mean, there's a sense of expectation in the air.
Yeah.
When they keep telling us that we've done everything we need to do to end the old matrix, and we're in the fifth dimensional awareness of the new dispensation, well, we'll be playing some things that'll really help deepen our path and heighten our awareness of how quickly that things really are moving.
They are moving very fast.
Yes. Behind the scenes. And all we are saying is give the peace time now a chance. There's a lot of deeper conversations going on about, you know, going and doing the right thing with Mr. Yahoo over there. He needs to be taken to the
Hague.
To the Hague and charged with war crimes.
Yep.
And that's being cussed and discussed on the Amy Goodman Show on a regular basis here.
Yes.
And I'm willing to see the light here and just notice that we have the ability to hold a character like Netanyahu accountable. It's not about hurting people. It's about having them go to class. you might say. There will be teachers in the jails, and they're going to have to attend class every day. And there's also things where they're going to work together, where they're going to, you know, help prepare meals together and clean up together and garden and build something with carpentry, learn skills. Those are the things that I remember the King of Swords talking about way long time ago when we started this, that those kinds of things would be taught in the prisons, so that we got a person that can have some skills and contribute to society and join society and be sane and wake up for the spiritual life to come here. Let's get spiritual. All right, everybody. So we're going to take our little numbers here, Rama. What's the number?
720-716-7301. And the pin code is 353-863-POUND. 720-716-7301. And the pin code is 353-863-POUND.
All right, so we'll see you on that conference call, everybody. And then after the next hour goes by, we'll be right back here at BBS Radio, the best radio in your neighborhood, wherever you live on the globe. Yes. Love and peace, everybody. So see you on the conference. Namaste, everybody, for now. Namaste. Are we going to just do Mother now, right, Rama? Oh, there you are. Oh, my goodness sakes. All right, everybody. I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to say hello to Mother, and then I'm going to give everybody the phone numbers to call and ask Mother some intelligent questions here. Greetings, Mother.
Greetings.
In the light.
In the light. The most radiant one. In the office of the Christ. And only in the office of the Christ. We invoke the loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame. We ask at this time for us to call in all the angels and the archangels and all the great beings of light, large and small and everything in between. Call it all in. Time for fifth dimensional living. Oh, Mother's heading out there to do something here for just a second. We will call these numbers in for being able to call Mother. I think she's going to look for another crystal or something in the other room. But the numbers to call in are, first one, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And then the other number is 323-744-4831. 323-744-4831. Greetings, Mother. Greetings, children of Ra.
Did you get another crystal? Is that what you did?
Yes.
That crystal ball. Okay. Greetings, Mother.
Greetings. Awesome times we are in. Is it?
not.
Indeed, Mother, there's a big change coming here, right?
Yes. It's the shift of the ages that everybody is talking about, that we all can feel, yet can't put your finger on it, or your claw, so to speak. It's a bit nebulous, 'cause it's the energies coming in that go from etheric into physical.
Manifesting a completely new dimensional reality on Earth.
New heaven, new Earth. Why do we need medieval torture chambers? Prisons. The process of realignment.
Hi, Don. Hello? Okay, everybody. So that was just a wake-up call there.
Yes.
So, well, Mother was talking. Can you remember where we get left off, Father?
The energies, plasma rainbow ray energies coming in from the solar flares, raising it up. It's amazing what's happening, because all the cells are singing each day. More and more. And this is a good thing, because our bodies are in becoming aligned with the higher energies coming in. We have no tangible way how to put it into words, except to say you can feel it. It is that tangible. That's what's bringing in the shift of the ages.
Well, it feels good, Mother.
It feels good. Yes. It's this awakening that's happening on an exponential level. And what we are seeing happening is all the crystalline forms are starting to sing. And that's been going on for a few years, yet it's becoming more and more increased. And the crystals make a sound that you can hear. All of the ancient structures, stones,
singing telephones.
Yes. All of the ancient structures around the planet made with crystalline energy, just like us. And what's happening is the gold dust coming in from the sun is making it even more intense. in our bodies. This is not a negative thing. It is a good thing. We have to take the time to integrate these energies each day. And it's amazing what happens. Yet you gotta get quiet and just sit and allow it to happen. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes an hour. And the tangible energy coming in changes your body, your structure. It is a very good thing. This is what is needed right now to connect with the quantum field. And we're all connected. It's happening more and more. At the same moment, the old timeline is just that. Gotta give it a rest and work with the new energies coming in. Our bodies, temples of the living love, living light, are the, this is the biggest deal in town, so to speak. Us.
We're the biggest happening. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. Because we're coming online with the quantum field and the rest of the galactic civilizations. And as we have said many times, we come from your future, which is our past. You make it to the Type 2 civilization. Right now, you're not even Type 1.
What are we?
Let's say it's not about judgment. It's about evolutionary development and what's happening to humanity is we are getting upgraded every nanosecond. We don't even know how to put these concepts into words, except that the quantum light speed of how our cells are absorbing the light coming in each second of each day and night is amazing. And this is what's raising us up in a very good way, so that as these solar flares come in, we are able to increase the amount of light we can take in without turning into confetti. And this is, in a way, right now, the energies coming in are the highest energies cosmic law will allow. What that means is that as you get quiet and do your spiritual work, you'll feel it. And it's tremendous. It is a good thing. Yet, as we absorb these energies coming in, all the stuff, all the trauma, all the grief, all the issues through these moments we call this present lifetime are up on the table for us to see, to heal, to integrate the wisdom of the experiences we've had. Some of these experiences are not so pleasant. Trauma that we have gone through. And through that, we gain wisdom to evolve even higher. And it's not by accident. It's that we made choices as we came in as souls to learn what this realm has to offer. And it's an adventure. I were losing the words because it is so big that our understatements can't even compare to what this is. This is the greatest adventure we've ever had. As souls in this lifetime, because all of the local type 2, type 3 civilizations are transfixed on our evolutionary development. That's why the Pleiadians are here, as Aurora Ray talks about the Sirians, Andromedans, Arcturians, Antares, so many. And this is family, friends. And as we integrate this wisdom, the soul remembrance comes into play so that we can work with our energies and evolve even faster to, let's say, greet the rest of the family. This not sure what to say about the news on your planet at the moment, because
everything's falling apart, Mother.
It is irrelevant in a sense because
it has to fall away, right?
So it does.
The new can take hold.
Yes. It is not in alignment with ascension. It's in alignment with the old timeline called the Matrix. And that is on its way to extinction, if you will.
That's true.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
That is that ancient timeline we speak about, that our wayward children put together to keep humanity as slaves. As slaves woke up and it's time to work with the equality of the nature of the universe, harmony of the spheres. These folks that are coming in at this time, rainbow crystal children and others from other dimensions, in the dream time, they are giving us the answers to life's most perplexing questions. And it's in this particular moment on this heaven on earth magical realm, there are so many folks that are not happy with what's happening, and they are making conscious choices to go over the rainbow. And we're not making any statements about what their choices are. Yet, it is in the best interest for everybody involved to stick around in the body and not just decide that it's not gonna work out. This is part of the illusion, the Maya of the Matrix, to create this despair. As you hear from your friend Tom on the radio, despair is not an option. This amazing time we're in, the violet flame has the technology how to integrate these energies. As you were to take an amethyst crystal and you merge yourself into the consciousness of that crystal, you will see worlds beyond worlds in that moment. The wisdom of all that has occurred in the present space-time moment is contained within the crystals. As you want to see a most uplifting YouTube, tune into your crystals. Much better than the what's on YouTube.
Something you can really hold in your hand and feel the higher energies.
Yes.
Flowing through your body, through your hands, through your arms.
Yes, this time that's happening as we are becoming aware of all the various kingdoms, queendoms that interact with us. This is the technology of nature and nature's God. The other forms, the science has to come into where science joins with spirituality. As Bruce Lipton, Greg Braden talk about, I'm not going to comment on anybody's political views, we're all equal in this story. How we got here is we got here now.
We've been here for a long time.
We have. Yeah. And only now things are really beginning to pop.
Remembering all the way back to our original beginnings, Mother.
Yes.
People can start doing that now. More than ever.
Yes, all of that wisdom is contained within ourselves, which are contained in connection with the quantum field. Like Matthias talks about, as you want to go to space, you gotta go in through the heart, create the Merkaba vehicle, and we can travel to wherever you want. It's easy, but yet it takes the wisdom to create this. It's not just words. It is real. It is about how we travel throughout the universe. And right now we're being asked to move it up, so to speak. Having a sense of humor helps.
You have one of those, I know, Mother.
Yes. And we comprehend.
Dismantling the existing old structure, there's a lot of resistance on the Republican side to doing that. They want to feel that power to control others. That's what they think is...
It gives them a rush. And that's that rush that you get when you take another's life force. Not good.
Not good.
That is not how you get your rush. You get the rush from connecting with your crown chakra, the soma that connects with the 9 stars above your head. Much better rush if you want that sort of thing. Yet it is about activating the kundalini. And this is how we turn on this marvelous technology called Adam Kadmon is one name, the light body. It's amazing to be here at this time and watch the unfoldment of humanity. We have great humbleness, respect for what you all go through each day. It is a challenge, and we respect that. How we do this together is the biggest test, with love. That's the key. That's that sound of the great bell that is being rung throughout all the cosmos, and can hear it in the heart. we should be.
Everything is waking up, Mother.
It is waking up exponentially fast. And sometimes it feels a bit slow as well. And that's when we get a bit lost in the Maya. Gotta leave the monkey mind alone. It does well on its own. Just let it be. Send it more love, and it will evolve.
Faster than we think.
Extremely fast.
We're finding more and more common ground amongst all of us.
Yes.
We're just watching with the sound off. What's her name up there, my mother?
Oh.
Stephanie Ruhle.
Yes.
The 11th hour, and they're having a big old round table, and there's some very different people representing a lot of different places they're coming from, and they're doing a lot of work, and they're also enjoying it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's this awakening to a higher power.
Maybe we can do this differently. Maybe we can do something that creates more freedom for everybody.
Yes. And it's waking up to the divinity that we are creator gods and goddesses of the Most High. Never in this storyline has it gotten to this point now where this is why we say this is the hour, so to speak, metaphorically saying, not giving a timeline. We're just saying this is it. And work with the energies of this violet flame that is being brought into our focus. This changes the cells. It changes everything in the body. It's a physical, tangible thing. You can taste, touch, feel, experience. The amethyst energy is that seventh ray that moves everything into higher perspective. We best be on our way. Got miles to go. Light years.
Okay, we can do that.
Yes.
I'm just looking forward for this to move quickly. I know that you've been saying that it's going very quickly, so.
It is going so fast. We have no words yet. Love is the answer through the darkness.
Are the Galactics going to do some intervening over there to stop this Gaza thing going on?
Already, there are movements happening where there are folks on the ground. From the ships.
Beaming people up.
Yes, in spite of these pronouncements of words saying, we're going to escalate things. Hamas needs to be eradicated. What needs to be eradicated are these ideas of division, amongst the people on the planet. We're all equal. All the rainbow rays, this is what makes up the Rainbow Nation. Yet these folks that are still locked in the Matrix don't realize that. Because it is a bit painful to leave the Matrix, as you saw in the movies. Yet, let's say, it is a challenge we are up for. It is happening exponentially. More and more folks are waking up with the quantum field. Like Cryon says, we see you. You are such magnificent, radiant souls that shine with trillions of particles of light. And we are in awe of you. Yet when we look at ourselves, we are going, what the F? Gotta leave it alone and trust the magic of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing.
Looking up.
Keep looking up. We're here. Greetings in the light of the most radiant one. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh.
Adonai
Sabaoth. This is the time. This is the hour. Use your gifts and abilities with the Force. It will change your life. Do it. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh,
Adonai Sabaoth, Kadosh, 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 Adonai Sabaoth, Kadosh, 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 Adonai Sabaoth, Eliyahu, 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 Yod-Heh. Bohe, Yava, Adonai Vasubaragas, Namaste, Mother, Namaste.
There's something called, for ways to take care of yourself and others, go to alone, with a capital A, together, with a capital T, .com. AloneTogether.com. I know that's something to check out.
Hello.
There you are, Rala.
I made it back.
You did? Where did you go?
Oh, to the Antares Arcturus Midway Station. Observing so many souls passing in there, reintegrating themselves into their new awareness, so to speak. It is about how so many souls are going over the rainbow, and Metatron, Michael, Raphael, Uriel, Ariel, Gabriel, all there helping, and it's a big deal. It's what's going on.
We're all helping each other to share these new feelings.
Yes. It's a tremendous time to be here. Exciting. At the same time, it's a trip, to use that old phrase, because What a long, strange trip it's been. And it only gets better from here. I got 1,500 years or 15,000 years to go.
Oh, longer than that.
Yeah, I'm just throwing an arbitrary date out there.
This has got such a beautiful... Earth Mother herself has a beautiful path, and yeah, she's been as patient as has had the patience of a saint while we figure out how we can live on this place and increase the beauty. This is just not too long. It's about 14 minutes, but I thought it was something interesting on free speech in terms of talking about the climate, the political climate, but how to pivot toward something better. So let's just play that. We'll do it. Here we go. Okay.
TV special with Mika Love. Our guest is an American journalist, founding member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, activist, and co-host of The Freedom Side, which you can find right here on Free Speech TV. Please welcome Eugene Perrier.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you for joining. As an activist who has been outspoken against Israel's military efforts and actions pre and post October 7th, do you perceive a diminishing momentum, or is the push for a ceasefire gaining any momentum, especially as Gaza nears its fifth month as what some may call a genocide?
I think what we can see is momentum is continuing to grow, and I think what we're seeing is not only is it continuing to grow, but it's expanding in a different and qualitative ways. I mean, when you look at, say, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, one of the largest African-American church congregations, not only passing a resolution in favor of a ceasefire, but calling for an end to all U.S. aid to Israel. The ongoing and continuing protests that we continue to see, I mean, everywhere, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Nancy Pelosi or any of these politicians are showing up. They're being disrupted. There's large protests that are outside. So I think maybe perhaps what can be perceived as a lack of momentum is the fact that there's a routinization that's happening because this genocide has been ongoing for so many months, that things that perhaps seemed, you know, notable, 10,000 people in the street, now seem a little bit more normal. But I think what we're seeing is an expansion of what is happening in the streets, but also a qualitative shift where it's not just in the streets, it's not just the activists, but we're seeing a growing number of institutions in our society, the trade union movement and others, that are starting to take up the issue. So I think this is actually, in fact, an inflection point where more and more of society is coming behind in solidarity with Gaza.
As we witness international bodies like the UN Security Council and the ICJ struggle to halt the Israeli military actions in Gaza, what message do you think this sends to younger generations whose beliefs, political beliefs, are being shaped?
Well, I think the number one message it sends is that the United States is playing an unbelievably negative role in the international stage. I mean, at least with the U.S. Security Council, we could have had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 resolutions passed for a ceasefire in the Security Council, but it's been, unfortunately, the U.S. delegation that has time and time again blocked ceasefire resolutions, done everything possible to water down other resolutions that have been passed. And I think that's why we're seeing so many young people come out, not just to protest, but say that they are unwilling or at least unsure if they can offer their votes to current President Joe Biden, specifically because I think they see day in and day out that this is not sort of a passive assistance, but an active assistance. And I think when we're looking at the UN Security Council, when we're looking at the ICJ, it's becoming very clear that the ideas of international justice and these international bodies are not what we're taught that they are, because ultimately they are subject to the whims of the most powerful institutions or the most powerful entities within those institutions. And in this case, primarily the United States, and it's a major block. And I think that it's sending a negative message in some senses about the current U.S. government, but a positive message to a lot of young people that if they want to see change, they have to be engaged.
Is that a current administration problem, or is that just historical context with the United States?
I think it's historical context. I think it's unfortunate, and I think, quite frankly, since the creation of Israel in 1948, since the Truman administration, but really in a huge way since the Nixon administration, we've really seen actually administration after administration after administration become more and more and more supportive of Israel to act in a more and more facilitating way in these international bodies to try to shield Israel. I mean, for instance, this was a major issue in the late 1990s during the Clinton administration when the World Conference Against Racism in South Africa was trying to pass a resolution that would say that Zionism is a form of racism. And this was, of course, being pushed by all the nations of the Global South. Famously, the U.S. delegation actually walked out of the conference to try to sabotage all proceedings based on this one particular thing. So I think, you know, this is something that I think we've seen historically on a number of issues, the way the sort of great powers have tried to move the institutions of the United Nations and other international institutions. But from this specific issue of Palestine, I think we've seen such consistency since Harry Truman on of the United States saying if Israel's doing something bad, we're going to try to run cover for them in the UN.
With the United States involvement in Ukraine and Africa, and like you mentioned, Gaza, do you think a potential second term for the Biden-Harris administration could improve international policy?
I think it's highly unlikely. I think the policies that they are running on are essentially continuing the genocide in Gaza. I mean, now they're talking about it with a little bit more, well, we wish they wouldn't do this, that, and the third, but they say that out of one side of their mouth. Then with the other hand, they're giving them, you know, free weaponry and bypassing Congress. We've seen certainly on the issue of Ukraine. We're seeing also with the ramping up of growing the military war machine in Asia. I mean, you've got the Marine Corps now going through a massive, you know, multi-billion dollar change to prepare for what they say is nuclear war potentially between the U.S. and China. I think we're seeing a continuation of sanctions on Iran. We're seeing a tightening, actually, of the blockade of Cuba, which many people thought, okay, well, Obama relaxed the blockade. Maybe Biden would do the same thing. He's actually doubled down on Trump's policies towards Cuba and moved away from even the Obama administration policies, of which there was a lot to criticize, but at least it was a move away from this policy that's really strangling the Cuban people. So I think what we would see with the second term would be more of the same. I think that's the challenge, is that whether we're talking about Trump or whether we're talking about Biden, maybe we're talking about a matter of degree on this or that issue, but at the end of the day, they're actually really talking about doubling down on war, doubling down on sanctions, doubling down on bullying countries like South Africa, allegedly our ally, to, you know, determine who their allies might be, all in this overarching quest or crusade, you could say, to shape the whole global environment as the world police and as the world hall monitor, apparently.
With us in an election year right now, and everybody thinking that it's either Biden or Trump, is it too early to assume that those are the only two viable candidates?
I don't think it's too early in the sense that the two major parties tend to be the largest, tend to always be relatively the main two candidacies. I do think that it's possible Trump, you know, maybe will have some legal trouble. Perhaps Biden will have some health trouble. But I think in general, we could expect those to be the two main candidates. I think the issue of viability is an interesting question, though. I'm glad you asked it, because I think it goes to how we conceive of our democracy. I mean, I think we're going to have a lot of third-party candidates. We've got Cornel West, Robert Kennedy Jr., Claudia De La Cruz, Jill Stein. And a lot of times what actually makes these non-viable candidates are the hurdles we put up in our own minds. If the number of people who supported these candidates would go out and vote for them, I think you'd start to see, you know, a plurality. You know, this person with 35%, this person with 27%, this person with 15%. You would actually see a broader and a better reflection of where people's politics actually are. But we're taught so much, and we're certainly it's reinforced in the mainstream media, that you should only choose one of these two candidates. That, in fact, even though we live in a democracy, you shouldn't choose what you want. You should subordinate your own whims and desires to what these two big business control parties put in front of you. So I think definitely we are going to see Biden and Trump, I think, at the top of both tickets. But I think this is a big year for people who are interested in politics to say there are a lot of interesting, viable candidates, but interesting, viable backgrounds and interesting platforms. And will people actually vote for what they want, not just what they're told to, I think will be the ultimate question. And with what we're seeing in Gaza, with an increasingly large number of people seemingly willing to look towards other options, I think this could be an interesting year, like, you know, 1912, 1856, some of these other elections where you've had five or six candidates in the mix.
When we're talking about battleground states in elections, for those who may feel disillusioned by the Biden-Harris administration, but don't necessarily want to vote for Trump, what do you say to them?
Well, I would say to them that the lesser of two evils strategy, I mean, we could go back a longer time, but let's just go to 1984, right? I mean, since 1984, I think, especially for people in battlegrounds, especially people who tend to be more on the progressive side of the political spectrum, they say vote for the lesser of two evils to prevent the worst thing from happening. But what we've seen election after election, 84, 88, 92, 96, and on and on, is the political spectrum of the country keeps moving further to the right. And things that in the middle 1980s, when Mondale was running against Reagan, would have been considered, you know, moderate, centrist type things, are now considered radical far left ideas by Bernie Sanders, right? And so you can see how over time the lack of any real legitimate challenge to this in the center to the left political spectrum, there's no one really keeping honest the Democratic Party, which means they continue to make compromises to speak towards the right. And I think what we can see, and we've seen this in elections many times before, maybe most famously in 1948, that really what tends to shape the political system in a way that moves it in a more progressive way is there being a real challenge to those who are trying to claim the mantle of progressive politics coming from the Democratic Party. So I would say it does. I can understand Trump is in many ways, I think, one of the most right-wing presidents we've ever had. I certainly can understand people have a lot of fear about what's happening and what could come next. But I would say, A, elections don't determine everything. And as we saw in Trump's first term, mass struggle was able to prevent him from doing some of the worst things. But I would say, too, if we really want to move the country in a different direction, there has to be a strong challenge that starts to pull things back and starts to challenge both sides of the, both major political parties to defend their own voter base by offering people solutions that actually meet the scale of their problems, which neither of those two major parties are doing.
And what do those challenges look like for everyday citizens? Is that continuing to email or reach out to your representatives? What is it? Protesting? What does the challenge look like?
I think it's all of that. I think that's the thing, is we have to move all down the line. I mean, I think it's important for us to have protests. It's important to have sit-ins. It's important for people to call Congress and also to show up at town halls, to run for office, to do popular political education. And that's, you know, you can do study groups, reading groups, other forms of events, speaking at your church. I mean, I think we have to really revive the political culture in this country, the oppositional political culture, and not just sort of put it on just one thing. We're just going to vote. We're just going to protest. We're just going to lobby. We have to build strong organizations and institutions that are going to protest, that are going to organize, that are going to lobby, that are going to run for office, that are going to educate people, that are going to put it all out there and put every single thing of our collective strength together in the fight so that we can try to move things in another direction.
Okay, I like that answer. Okay, so NBC News recently reported that a conservative group funded by anonymous donors sent mail to approximately 75,000 Democratic voters in the South Carolina primary. With the criticism that Biden has faced concerning the black vote and his efforts to capture the black vote at the same numbers that he did in the previous election, is something like this, is an action like this something that can deter black voters from voting for Biden or voting in general?
I think it's the type of thing that it probably won't be determinative, but it will impact things that people were already feeling. I mean, I think that we've already seen with the Biden administration, he's been losing ground with black voters or black potential voters. He was unable to really meet the agenda. I mean, even if you look at, you know, quote unquote mainstream organizations like the NAACP, many of the things they were bringing forward on student loans, he was unwilling to do. Many of the pieces they were bringing forward on climate justice wasn't able to come forward. I think people have felt on the issue of mass incarceration and criminal justice, despite having what happened in 2020, there hasn't really been a commensurate effort from the Biden administration. We're still seeing, you know, ultimately double the black unemployment of white unemployment. The two times that gap hasn't really shifted. A significant number of people, I mean, you look at this issue now of lead in the water, one of the worst issues in black communities that were being poisoned. And, you know, you look at, say, a state like Wisconsin, Milwaukee, heavily black area, where, you know, the pipes are massively poisoned, the black community, multi-generational. It would only cost $600 million in order to replace every single pipe in Wisconsin so that people don't have poisoned water. The federal government has not appropriated enough money. In fact, if you look at the money that Biden has appropriated to deal with lead and water, it's about $300 billion less than what's necessary to fix the problem. So in some of these communities, Baltimore, Milwaukee, Detroit, different places on so many different issues, people have seen that. So I think someone sending out a mailer, sort of reminding people and hitting them, can, I think, play a negative role for Biden, because it can take general feelings that people feel like he has not really done enough, but actually put some numbers next to it. And I think Biden is in real trouble. Gaza is another issue where a lot of younger black voters are you know, considering not voting for him. So I think, you know, whether or not these mailers will make the difference, I do think that they are trying to capitalize on the undercurrent in the black community, which is very real, which is we give them a huge consistent amount of votes to the Democrats every single election cycle, and yet and still it doesn't seem that the black community's issues are pushed to the forefront in the same way.
Well, thank you, Eugene. This was very informative and very helpful, I think, walking into or already being into an election year. So thank you for joining us today. You can catch Eugene Puryear on the Freedom Side right here on FSTV. I'm your host, Nika Love. Join us again next time.
Okay, so now Rama, are you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is from Gaia TV. This is called Seven Soul Archetypes. How do the seven sacred rays interweave with soul archetypes and their evolution? Linda Bachman shares that the seven sacred rays, an ancient concept rooted in theosophy, emanate from source and impart truths to humanity. These energies also manifest as soul types and influence various facets of existence, encompassing human personality and spiritual advancement. Each one functions like a prism, refracting divine energy into distinct qualities that can serve as a guide for souls on their evolutionary journey. She further dissects her seven soul archetype framework and emphasizes that our soul archetype remains eternal while weaving a tapestry of experiences across lifetimes. The host is Regina Meredith, and the guest is Linda Bachman. And this is 45 Minutes, and we will begin now. Here we go, everybody. It's a comment.
The flag I've been waving for decades is that once we can consciously connect with our higher self, the game changes. We know our purpose, our path, and what we need to do now. Toward that end, Dr. Linda Bachman has been teaching her students the nature of the soul and the differences among the souls here on Earth, and we are wildly different. Welcome back, Linda. It's wonderful to sit with you again.
Thank you, Regina. It's great to be back.
So I thought what we do is, for people who didn't see our previous show, and I recommend they do, because we'll do some other things too, but we'll go over a few things like the nature of the soul. And you call the soul the higher self, right?
Oh, that's an important, can we start there?
Let's start there, because everyone, the vernacular for what soul, spirit, and higher self is different from tradition to tradition and person to person.
Absolutely.
So give us, so we know what you're talking about, your definition.
Okay, good. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
For clarity. Okay, so when we're in body, you, me, people listening, when we're in body, we have a portion of our soul energy in our body that causes us to live and breathe. Our higher self is the remainder of our soul that exists somewhere in the spiritual realm that is not in our body. And we have to have a higher self because that's part of our guidance system. So higher self and soul in body are related, but they're, we might say, two different aspects of our soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because of my background, I tend to come from the language of Hermetics, although embrace many, many different philosophies and traditions. the language there would pair, it's almost like a pairing complex of that infinite spark of soul and the higher mind as a complex. Mm-hmm. But the higher mind can be accessed and translated to the lower mind, to our conscious mind. So that I'm kind of coming from that place. So when I'm talking to you, that's what I'm seeing in my mind. And the problem is that most people are not connecting consciously with the higher mind, which is here to do the guiding.
I could have said the exact same words to you. That is part of the issue for a lot of people, is they're not connecting to their soul energy. Mm-mm. In the higher realm. Mm-mm. And that way they know who they are, they receive their guidance, but they don't think about connecting to what you might be calling the higher mind and I would call the higher self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing. Yeah. So the higher self, you and I have the same perception that the higher self is probably our most profound guidance, but at times we can't access it, so we need help from some other friends. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yes, yeah, so let's put that, if we can, in the context of spiritual guides.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So here's what I know from years of guiding regression about spiritual guides, and I know we'll talk about the different types of souls, but if you are a soul that primarily incarnates on Earth, then your higher self is a guide, and at the same time, you have a separate experienced guide that is not your higher self.
Yes.
If you're an interplanetary soul, meaning you come from somewhere else in the universe and you don't come here often, then your higher self, not always but often, is your primary guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know we'll talk about angelic souls. If you're a soul from the angelic realm, usually your higher self is your main guide.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what the unique challenge, because we're talking percentages here. Most of the people on Earth are Earth-based souls, you say. They've incarnated many times and they know the energetic and they know the drill of what it means to be human, the physicality, the energies of the earth, the, you know, the resistance, you know, beauty, etc.
Right.
You say that you are a very, very well experienced earth-based soul.
Right. So I'll put it in percentages to try to ground it.
Yeah.
About 95% of humans are earth-based souls, meaning their soul was designed to grow and evolve on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And about 95% of humans are, if we put evolution, soul evolution on a 10-point scale, 95% of humans are probably between a 4 and a 6.
What's that mean?
That means that they're, think about it like earth-based souls come into body on earth to grow and learn.
Mm-hmm.
So 95% of humans are souls designed to come primarily to earth,
mm-hmm.
and they are mid-range of development in terms of soul wisdom.
Yeah, soul development.
Exactly.
Yeah, so around midland, 4 to 6.
Exactly.
Yeah, on the scale. Yeah.
Then if we take that other 5% that we're not talking about, so that other 5% of humans, about half are advanced earth-based souls. Souls that are 7s, 8s, and 9s on a 10-point scale, yeah, of evolution.
Yeah.
And then take the other, hope this isn't confusing for people, take the other 2.5%, and yeah, we have to split that into two. Half of that, 2.5% or so, are interplanetary, mm-hmm, and the other half are angelic. Those souls, interplanetary and angelic, are all highly advanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they come to Earth.
Right.
To help us,
right,
basically.
Yeah. They're here, they're on a mission.
Correct.
And so they usually have their own guidance, they're clear on what they're here to do, and oftentimes find that path earlier in life than an earth-based soul that's trying to figure it out and not getting clear communication with their higher mind.
Correct, and often struggle more than earth-based souls do in body.
Definitely.
On earth.
With being in a body in particular is very difficult.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about, so as an earth-based soul, which is the average person that's going to be walking around on earth between a 4 and a 6, and they're trying to gain access to their guidance, what's blocking them from going directly to the higher mind rather having to talk directly with a guide? What's the benefit of each aspect in development?
Well, one thing that's blocking so many humans, as I was blocked until I was well into my 40s, one thing that's blocking them is they don't understand how to access intuition, or they don't trust their intuition.
Well, and society makes sure you don't.
That's right.
So to be fair, we've got a lot working against us on Earth.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. We're not taught what is intuition.
Right.
How does it work? We think we're making it up. So, yes. But for an Earth-based soul, and obviously I'm an example of an Earth-based soul, for an Earth-based soul, we communicate with both a lead guide mm-hmm. that's not our higher self, and with our higher self.
Yeah.
And so we almost have not more guidance than an interplanetary soul or an angelic, but we have almost like two avenues, two connections. I often talk to my higher self. I'd like to just, you know, call it her. Does my higher self have gender? No. But her is just easier. And I talk to my main guide that is not my higher self.
So I'm going to guess from your mission in life that you're among the percent that are advanced Earth-based souls. You've been around a long time. You've really been working on it. And so each of those aspects, does one come in handy more than the other, an outside guide versus higher self? Are there distinctions between how you use them?
Regina, that's an awesome question. Let me see how to answer that. That's hard. When I talk to my higher self, it's almost like I'm talking to my big sister.
Mm-hmm.
I don't literally have a big sister in mm-hmm. current life, but it's almost like I'm talking to my big sis. I respect her, but she's also me, part of me.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to my main guide, who I know at this stage of my life, I'm very familiar with my main guide. It's a very advanced, we might call an ascended master. There's a little bit more of a mentor feel. There's a little bit more of a senior professor, but not in a dogmatic, critical way.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually go to each of them with different types of questions.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's good. For anyone listening who are also in the same boat, I just wanted to give a little practical information up front. So first of all, you say there are three components of the way our minds work. Part of it is the past, which, of course, is the subconscious, where everything is embodied, essentially. It's all remembered. We carry that forward with us, those memories, and the subconscious memories to help us contend with Earth life. We've got a template in there for when this happens, step that way. So let's talk about that part of our mind.
So what we're talking about, I mean, here is where obviously I understand the brain to a degree because of my background in psychology. I think of the subconscious as what's that content of information that's held in my human brain that if I relax or if I have a dream or I daydream, I can track. Now, what was the name of my second grade teacher? Oh, yeah, her name was so-and-so.
That's going to be over there in that library.
That's right. And mm-hmm. that's the library in my human brain
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the library at my soul level.
Right, right. Because that's the library of the soul level continues with us. Does it not? So we can continue growing from that base and learning from that base.
Right. And the library at the soul level is held with our higher self.
Yes.
But also our main guide. If we have a separate main guide, mm-hmm. they also have access to our library.
Right. Okay, good. So one of the things that we weren't going to talk about, but I'd like to, is first we'll get into the nature of these different three soul types and the notion that Earth-based souls in particular have the ability, as far as you're able to see in all these regressions, to split into different incarnations simultaneously, which is interesting. I mean, some systems say that's not possible. Others say it is possible. So we're going to talk about evidence for that. So first of all, tell us about the nature of Earth-based souls a little bit. You talked about it a bit. And the nature of interplanetary souls and largely what they're tasked with and angelic.
Okay. Well, the nature of Earth-based souls is that we've just been here over and over most of the time. Maybe not over and over quite as much as I have or other experienced Earth-based souls, but still, Earth-based souls, it's like if I need to drive from Denver to Colorado Springs, I don't need a map. because I have a lot of experience in a particular state.
Mm-hmm.
That's earth-based souls sort of know the ropes.
So they're a little physically, emotionally, generally more comfortable, you're saying?
Generally, but the more advanced an earth-based soul is, then they begin to be very affected by energy, very affected by intuition that might get in the way at times, mm-hmm. but is purposeful. But nonetheless, their experience just being in body in these human bodies that are unique over and over and over and over again.
And so then we go to the IP souls, which are interplanetary. They can be from other planets. Can they also be from other dimensions?
So that sort of depends on what people mean by dimensions. And so maybe the easiest way to put it is that interplanetary souls on Earth almost always come from somewhere inside of the solar system that contains Earth. And, you know, we often call that the solar system, mm-hmm. but it's the solar system because we're living on Earth.
Right.
And so Earth-based souls, interplanetary souls come from planets, star systems, but they also come from non-dense locations like
that's what I'm asking.
You're referring to.
Yes.
They don't always come from something that has density. They can come from spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always have to be from Sirius or the Pleiades. They come from places where the names mean nothing to us.
Right, right. And so people are perked up and listening to this and thinking, well, I don't feel comfortable on Earth. How might they identify themselves if they were an IP soul?
Various ways. One of my favorite ways, because I hear this a lot from clients, is that it's the person who says to me something like this. You know, Linda, even as a young child, I was fascinated with the night sky. Even as a 5-year-old, I would stand by the window in the evening and stare out the window. And my parents would say, you know, Susie, Johnny, whatever, come away from the window. But no, I was fascinated with what goes on out there in the dark sky. As an earth-based soul, I wasn't fascinated with that. So usually something sci-fi-ish, mm-hmm. Astrologically related, they're fascinated with. The other common identifying feature is health, mm-hmm. is allergies, digestive disorders, sleep issues, autoimmune disorders, the autistic spectrum. Those people who struggle in such ways, sometimes to extremes, not always to extremes, that's often a sign of an interplanetary soul.
Well, one very, very, very hotly debated and well-known one that immediately comes to mind is Elon Musk. He cannot be an earth-based soul.
I don't know for sure, but I would suspect
surprised.
You're completely
especially
accurate.
With his drive to take human consciousness to Mars since he was a kid. We've got to get to Mars, and being on the spectrum at the same time.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Saying inappropriate things because he doesn't have filters, you know. So that's kind of an interesting extreme version, I think, of what's likely a planetary soul. Has a lot of digestive issues too, I hear.
Yes, and also think about, and I don't necessarily want to name names even if of public figures, but think about famous movie producers and directors, the Spielbergs of the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the kind of movies that someone, there are others besides Steven Spielberg, but Spielberg tends to do, for the most part, earth-based type movies.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about some of the other famous directors and producers mm-hmm. and writers, where they're teaching us about the broader perspective of the world out there mm-hmm. and space.
Mm-hmm.
The Disney movie Soul, those are probably writers, directors, producers that are interplanetary souls.
Right. So, as you said, hard living in the body. Just, it's a stretch. So now let's go to the other teeny percentage, which are the angelic souls.
Yes, and you know, you're right. As I said, teeny percentage, yes. But spiritual people that are probably interested in what we're discussing
have a high percentage, like in our audience, for
That's
example.
Right. Fit in
both IPs and angelic souls.
Totally,
yeah.
Totally. So angelics is the third type of souls that I began to learn a lot about, 10, 12, 14 years ago through my clients. So angelic souls serve the divine. We're talking about and you know, divine. I want people out there to pick their word. The source, great spirit, the Tao, another term I tend to use, an Eastern term, the Manu, is a group soul, a highly advanced group soul that seeks to guide Earth and humanity forward in terms of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So the Manu, the source, whatever you call it, they have a cadre of souls that support them as ambassadors, carrying, and human words are inadequate, carrying love and compassion to an extreme, but bringing it to Earth. There are angelic souls on Earth. They struggle with the lack of love on our planet. And I don't just mean everyday kind of, you know, love, 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 like we talk about it. But deep
with cruelty, for example, have a very difficult time with cruelty and war and unkindness, insensitivity would just be devastating to them.
Right. And we need these souls. I'm going to give a quick example that pops into my mind, and be cautious to camouflage this a bit. This is a woman who's a nurse. She's an angelic soul. She works in a large hospital in the United States. She's was the head of the ER for a period of time. She was the charge nurse, the main nurse in charge of the ER. And all these street people kept being brought in, especially on weekends, and they were acting strange and bizarre. And normally when they came into the ER, the ER docs would hit them with heavy sedatives, major sedatives to knock them out. Mm-hmm. And finally she said to some of the head doctors in the ER, she said, could we start by giving them a shower, a meal, and time to sleep?
A cup of tea and some sleep.
Exactly. And then let's see if they need heavy sedatives or they don't need heavy sedatives to calm down. Sure enough, she's an angelic soul with some nurturance. These street people didn't need heavy sedatives. That's the way an angelic soul would think.
That's beautiful. But then didn't the people return to the street? And then it just starts the cycle over again. So what do they do, right, when they've been bumped around so much by life that they're not contending very easily with it?
Well, we don't assist street people in ways they need to be assisted. There are programs here in the state where I live where they're building tent communities where they get food, they get water, they get warmth. We just tend to cast those people aside because we decide we're scared of them or something like that.
Because they're operating outside of social norms.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So backtracking a little bit. So that would be, I assume that was a regression of a woman. Okay. Let's talk about something that jumps to mind is a fascinating regression of an IP soul.
Mm. You know, I have so many. One pops in my mind from recently. This is a woman, again, I'm wanting to be appropriate and confidential. This is a woman, into her adult years. She has a very responsible, I'm going to call her a spiritual leader.
Mm-hmm.
And she has always talked to what she calls the Great Mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we might quickly think, oh, well, we're talking about the soul of Mother Mary or Kuan Yin.
Or Earth.
Or Earth, correct. And in fact, she's an IP soul that comes from somewhere, I really don't know where, and she works with what was described with lots of detail. I didn't give her the details, she gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Mother in the universe that is, we might say, the energy of the quintessential divine feminine.
Isis, even in Egyptian terms.
Correct.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is the energy she brings as a spiritual leader to help people. At first, I thought she was earth-based, but as we went further in her regression, she's interplanetary. So this is the, you know, the mother, the nurturer, the deeply, deeply caring, the caregiver in the universe that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the energy she brings to people she works with.
Interesting. And I mean, when I think of that energy and I think of the kind of, if you go back to the basis of everything, you've got, if you go through the Egyptian lens of Osiris and Isis, you have Logos and you have Prima Materia,
right.
Basically.
Right.
Which is, we need to learn how to work with these mediums, these creative mediums on a different level now, because we're not understanding that logos has effect on matter, the creation of what we see in our world. And so this is what she's doing. It sounds like she's kind of going back to one of the most primitive aspects of what it is to be the receiver that ultimately manifests into nurturing. That's pretty powerful.
Yes, and I think, Regina, a piece that is really important that I hear from clients is that the master levels of high evolved energy that, again, we might call source, they are, and I hear this, they are extremely worried about humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because humanity, we have a huge sex trafficking problem, for example. Humanity is, I might say, not progressing as much as Source would wish for us to progress. So humanity, just in relation to what you just said, humanity is pushed harder and more advanced souls are being brought closer to Earth to try to guide we as humans, to guide us to take steps, I might say, to clean up our human act.
And if you then go through the Vedic lens on top, what, that kind of validates what you're saying. We are in the Kali Yuga. That is a difficult cycle. We're in a dark cycle and trying to find our way back to the light as we're emerging from that dark cycle. So we need, as Earth needs, all the help it can get. And I think it's really important if people start teaching the mechanics of how reality works, the nature of reality, the nature of creation, the nature of working with the masculine, the word, the thought form, the feminine, the reception that materializes into this ultimate reality. We don't even know how reality, we don't even study how reality works. The building blocks of reality, which should be, they should start with that in kindergarten, you know?
I mean,
I'm an IP, right? So that's the kind of thing, of course, I think about all the time is why aren't we teaching the building blocks and nature of reality in kindergarten?
Exactly. And I don't, I mean, that's the beauty of an IPU talking to an earth-based soul, EB me, is that we don't study the soul.
No.
We don't study where did we come from? Why are we here? What's our purpose? Where is our soul? What is our soul doing?
Yeah.
What is our higher self doing when we're here in body? We don't teach that.
I know, and it's critical for us to start learning about the essence of what we are, how we create, what our minds, what our words, what our connection with each other does. It's just so elementary, and it's the furthest thing from any kind of educational system. So anyway, that's my little axe to grind. But so let's go on now back to Earth-based souls and the nature of trying to kind of speed up this process a bit, maybe. I assume it's not for kicks that a soul splits.
Absolutely not for kids.
So let's talk about what happens when a soul splits and then explain the difference between that and what we might call a twin soul. Or is it one and the same?
Okay. Well, some of it depends on who you're talking to and what they mean by those terms.
Mm-hmm.
So just to quickly comment on twin soul, when I use the term twin soul, I mean if I, Linda, have a twin soul, that is another soul with whom I've had many, 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 many lives.
Okay, so a strong resonance with a separate soul.
Correct.
Okay, now split soul.
Split soul, which happens primarily only for earth-based souls, but on occasion with angelic souls, and I'll come back to that. There's, I think, an important piece to say about angelics. As an earth-based soul that is experienced, an earth-based soul can split into more than one be more than one person simultaneously because they've agreed to try to help the planet progress faster, farther, if you will. And there are a lot of public figures that are splits that are the same soul. Sometimes you can recognize this by thinking about two people you know in the public eye that tend to look alike.
Mm-hmm.
And often that is the same soul. And for now, I'll leave names out. Maybe that's the cleanest way to put it. But earth-based souls do split. I actually know that I have soul splits.
Mm-hmm. How many? How many can one have at a time motivated by the same soul?
It's a, That's a great question. A very, very advanced Earth-based soul can have 25 splits.
Wow.
Yeah. And the reason is that an Earth-based soul that's been here many times can energetically balance how difficult it is from the higher self level, mm-hmm. can balance that many incarnations. Mm-hmm. But it's by way of trying to push humanity forward.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece that's probably important for me to interject just so that we talk about it, angelics can have splits. And this may stretch people's minds. So I want people to think about archangels. Mm-hmm. So archangels, as most people know, are the leaders, the coordinators of the angelic realm that work directly with Source. Archangels are the four classic archangels, plus there are more. So there's Michael, there's Gabriel, there's Raphael, there's Uriel. There are other archangels as well. Some of the archangels do still incarnate. Some of the archangels, I have regressed clients that the content is too specific to be wrong. They are aspects of an archangel. Certain archangels, Michael is one example, have splits on Earth mm-hmm. at this time. Again, to try to affect.
They're projecting a portion of soul into a human, into a human form.
That's correct. That's correct.
So would you say from the people that are more, that are here for very clear purpose that you've regressed, do you see that as fairly common then for the Earth-based souls who have split? Do you see the split happening in people who are very purposeful and really trying to do a lot with the soul in a given time frame like this?
Yes, I do. But I also think it's important to say that there are a lot of Earth-based souls that are experienced that don't have splits.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily the norm, mm-hmm. but it certainly does happen.
That's interesting. So it gives people something to think about. Mm. Okay. And thank you for your definition also of the twin flame. So one of the, I mean, when I think of angelic souls, I think of my late stepmother mm-hmm. who was, she just lived to love everything. There was nothing more. A lot of people thought she was too kind of simple because she didn't have this drive and purpose. And I said, well, that's a pretty high purpose. Everyone that touched her and touched into her life felt seen and loved. Every baby, every animal, mm-hmm. every adult. Mm-hmm. Just a sparkly, beautiful little soul named May. And not little soul, but little woman named May.
Yeah, I mean, that just brings up, that's the beauty of conversation with you and me, brings up a couple of things. One is that when I work with an angelic soul, almost always they're some of the most non-judgmental people
yeah.
I have ever met
Not
yet. In my
she
life.
Was like that, no judgment.
But the other piece that's important to say is there are interplanetary souls that come from places in the universe that are also focused almost completely on heart,
yeah.
heart energy.
Yeah.
And they are not angelic souls, but they come across that same way
yeah.
because they're so feeling oriented.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to get into these traits because people are listening thinking, gee, where am I? Where's my spouse? Where's my child in all of this? And so there's another thing. You're talking about an overlay also of seven archetypes. And last time we did not get to that, and I wanted to make time for it this time.
Okay.
So let's talk about the archetypal element to all of this.
So this came through regression. I learned this person to person to person to person. And what I understand is that when we are on Earth, but no matter which type of soul we are, and there's a slight difference, which I'll try to be clear about, but so an Earth-based soul like myself, I have a soul archetype that is immortal. It's one of seven energies. None of us seven are better than, you know, one isn't better than the mm-hmm. other. And I'll give a couple of examples.
We're going to go through all seven, by the way.
Okay. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
We have
time to do it.
Okay. That's perfect. Okay. So let's do that. So as an Earth-based soul, I have a soul archetype. It's unchanging. It shows up in all my lives. So, okay. So we'll kind of delineate mm-hmm. each of these seven. The first of the seven, I like to call it, I can use this because the person that's not on the planet anymore, we might call it the Steve Jobs energy, mm-hmm. meaning it's the change agent. You could also call it the Moses energy, the change agent of this isn't working, so we're going to make change. It is someone who's very strong, very directive, pretty left-brained, and says, I've got to make change, and the way things are working isn't going the way it is. And that's Steve Jobs, who obviously created the Apple computer. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure that Steve Jobs is what we might call a first ray soul, but mm-hmm. probably he is. Yeah. So that's first ray. I'll add that I had a mother that was first ray, and until I understood archetypes, I didn't get my mother. It was like, oh, she's so specific. She's sometimes so demanding. And it's like, she's a first-ray soul. So mm-hmm. no wonder she's like that. Mm-hmm. So that's first-ray. Second-ray flips over to right brain. It flips over to love, caring, nurturing, making sure everybody gets their needs met. Probably your mother-in-law, I think you said, or mm-hmm. grandmother.
My stepmom.
Stepmom.
Yeah.
Yeah. 10 to 1. Your mm-hmm. stepmom was second ray energy. It's mm-hmm. that deep, deep caring person. And it could be caring in front of the scenes or behind the scenes. So it could be some public figure that is just so kind and loving and supportive. But it could be your everyday neighbor mm-hmm. who's just sweet and
like me.
And wonderful. And wonderful.
Yeah.
So that's second ray. And these keep flipping left brain, right brain, left brain, right brain.
Mm-hmm.
Third ray soul. And I know some of your listeners are saying, oh, Linda's talking about theosophy. Linda's talking about the race structure of yes. theosophy.
Yes.
Yes, I am, with some expansion and a little bit of tweaks to that.
Yes.
That sort of mm-hmm. Paradigm of understanding. Third ray soul. I'm a third ray soul. Third rays love to learn and learn and learn and ad nauseum learn more. Yeah. They're wanting to meld knowledge.
Yeah.
And then they're wanting to benefit our culture by melding knowledge. So a third ray soul isn't just trying to be intellectual all the time, but is tasked with understanding knowledge and wisdom and then sharing it in one way or another.
Okay.
So that's number three.
Okay.
Number four, think about, we can use public figures. I'm going to use someone I've never regressed, of course, Frida Kahlo, one of the more famous artists on our planet. Fourth ray souls are aesthetic people.
Mm-hmm.
They're into cooking. They're into art. They're into design. They're into anything that we think about melding elements. They're musicians. Yeah. So fourth ray is on the feeling side. Mm-hmm. But it's on the aesthetic,
artistic, in all its expressions.
Exactly.
Okay.
Again, and all of these can be in front of the scenes and right. behind the scenes.
Right. Okay. And now we have logistics, fifth ray.
So number five is easy to explain. It's probably the easiest. It's the person who makes pieces fit together. It's the family member that decides every Thanksgiving who's going to bring what.
And now, I have a friend that is exemplifies that. 25 people for 6 days every Thanksgiving. Man, that thing is run like a war room, you know?
Exactly. It's the implementer. It's strategy
yeah.
person. It's that.
It's impressive.
We need people to do
it's
that.
Impressive.
Totally.
I'm
totally.
Not that.
Yeah, totally. I'm not that either. So that's number five.
Okay.
Number six goes back to being right-brained. Number uh-huh. six is like taking love, compassion, and putting it on steroids. It's group cohesion. It's the neighborhood. It's the family. It's the country. It's the person who is very effective at international politics.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the person. I mean, I'm thinking about people.
Diplomats, like politicians in the highest sense would represent that. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. How can we make sure that, groups work together effectively and with equality?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that egalitarian
mm-hmm.
person. So that's number six. It's a caring person who is like strong and you think they're left brain, but they're strongly right brain because of their group caring energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then lastly, number seven. Number seven is the Merlin energy. It's the humanitarian. It's the alchemy of energies one through six. Uh-huh. It's taking each of the six energies, melding it into one, and bringing it to the sustainability and the stability that we need with humanity. So that's number seven.
They're the alchemists.
That's right.
Okay, right. So this then comes into the subject of dharma, because you say that our dharma carries over from lifetime to lifetime, which means, it sounds to me like you can't separate that from this archetypal energy.
No, absolutely not, because...
So talk about yourself, for example.
Well, your dharma, dharma meaning soul intention.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just, again, I'll use myself as you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
My dharma from my lives, in other words, what have I accomplished in my lifetimes, builds on itself. And then when I come into body again, I bring the compilation of all that dharma or all that what I've accomplished forward. Does that mean I'm a perfectly accomplished soul, that anybody is a perfectly accomplished soul? Absolutely not. I still have karma to clean up. I still have intentions I haven't satisfied. But our dharma is crucial. Often people come for regression, and one of the things we're going to do is discover a past life. So often the client, before the regression starts, says, oh, I don't want to know I've done something wrong. I don't want to know that I was an involved spouse, or, you know.
They want to see themselves as a bad person.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They're scared of seeing the dark stuff.
And I say to them, when we discover a past life today, number one, I don't choose the past life.
Yeah.
The higher self of my client and the guides choose the past life. But I say to the person, you may learn about dharma today, not karma.
Mm-hmm.
Your guides may want you to know what you've accomplished that you don't give yourself credit for.
Yeah.
And so often that comes forward.
Yeah. And people are, we have been made over thousands of years to feel less than. I mean, in the Judeo-Christian world, the word sinner,
right,
is inculcated into your mind and vocabulary from the time you go to Sunday school, 3, 4, 5 years old. You're a sinner, you're less than. So, of course, people have a terrible low self-esteem, thinking that they're bad. But my belief is, intrinsically, most people are good, though we've all done some bad things in our incarnations. We have to sweep up at some point, rebalance.
Well, and I think it's how you're putting it, too. It's that most of us, at the core, are good.
Yeah.
It's behavior that we need to clean
up.
Yeah,
who knows what was going on at the time, and you just stepped over the line. And, well, you'll bounce that one out down the road.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
The thing is, there's grace to it. There's grace to even the subject of karma.
Mm.
So anyway, so yes, thank you for explaining about that, archetypes, and also the continuation of these kind of urgent desires that we wish to fulfill in a lifetime that we end up calling dharma. And one thing you've been looking at is examining a grief through the lens of the soul, grief and loss, and you're writing a new book, and we're going to come back after that book's out and talk about it. But just give us an idea of what you're focusing on in this book and why.
Yeah, I want to just quickly come back to your word grace, and then
yes,
answer your question. Yes, I agree. There is almost always grace. I will add, though, because I learned this through clients, that if someone is a despot, if someone has...
psychopath and cruel.
Then when they cross over, when that life is over, my understanding is that that soul must take time to learn and clean up some of that inappropriate behavior.
No, that makes sense.
Before they come back.
But we're talking about a more extreme class of psychology.
Absolutely.
We're talking about psychopaths and people that don't have empathy.
That is correct.
So, and that's not most people.
That's
so
right. That's
most
right.
People
totally
are
true.
Good at heart. So,
yeah.
And thank you for bringing that up. And
Yeah.
We're seeing a rise, however, in mental illness. And we're seeing a rise in psychosis and other types of
yes.
mental disorders, yes. Narcissism, and so forth, but we're not going to go there. Okay. Give us a few minutes. We have a few minutes left okay. to talk about grief, loss through the lens of the soul.
Yeah. So, I mean, why did I decide to write another book? I would say there's probably two or three reasons. One is I wanted to write one more book that is almost like a handbook. It's looking at helping people, whether they ever have a regression or they don't, helping them understand with as much clarity as possible, am I earth-based? Am I interplanetary? Am I angelic? The angelic material is not something I've written about, so that will be a first. Mm-hmm. But to help people comprehend themselves and embrace themselves. Then in addition, I started in this whole field of psychology through grief and loss.
Right.
Through my own grief and loss. And I think grief and loss needs to be understood not just from an everyday conventional perspective, but more from soul. Like, why is there a particular soul that either passed 3 months ago or 30 years ago? What's my connection with that soul? For what reason has that affected me so much? What's going on at the soul level?
Yes.
In terms of grief?
That's where it should all be examined from, in my opinion. But
yeah. And maybe lastly, Regina, here's where we started with our discussion, is about higher self. So many people don't think to talk to their higher mind, their higher self, and let that support them. So there's a whole chapter and guidance on how to connect with higher self. So that's why it was time to dig in and write another book.
Well, I'm glad you are, because as I said in the open, that's the missing ingredient for almost all of humanity. And we have to snap out of that.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot afford to continue to just kind of bump around in the dark and bump into each other and say, hey, it's good enough. The times that we're entering are demanding more of us than that. So it's time to start getting to know thyself.
Absolutely. Thyself in the greatest and then largest way.
Yeah. Yes. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I mean, I'll just say that, I think if people accept themselves more, if people accept that what they think is a flaw, like a fear, a phobia, something they can't let go of, dig in deeper and know that it's something at the soul level that if you understand it and know what it's about, you can let it go. But it's not a flaw or something that's wrong with you.
Right. And that's even, I know it's a little trite, but that's where even things like journaling come in, where you just let it flow, get it out, go back and look at it with this lens that we're talking about, and you start learning about yourself and where that's coming from. So absolutely beautiful. Well, I love your work, and I'll look forward to talking to you after your next book's out.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
To learn more about Linda's regression work, workshops, and such, you can go to ravenheartcenter.com. They do all kinds of workshops around the world. You can also watch my previous interview with her here in the Gaia Archives. Until next time, thank you for joining us here on Open Minds.
All right. This one is called Journeys into the Soul. We're doing soul work here tonight. This says, in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, Diyali embarks on a soul-stirring journey to uncover her emotional blockages. And unlock the keys to shedding her defense mechanisms during a tender session. She comes to peace with her struggle to tap into her femininity, immersing herself in powerful childhood memories. She discovers how to embrace vulnerability. This is Indrani Sinha. Mm-hmm. And this is 33 minutes, and we will do this starting now. Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Only you have to be strong, and you cannot let other people beat you. And you can never cry. You shouldn't cry like weak girls. You are not weak. And after that, I never cried.
I'm 55 years old. I live in Dubai and I'm a professional artist and a fashion designer. I was born and brought up in India. I've had a very happy, fulfilled childhood. I remember it full of laughter and happiness and love. We had a lot of fun, a lot of adventures, and I was always creative. I was always building things out of whatever I could find, whether it was tires or wire or art of any sort, painting on walls and doors and windows and everything, much to the annoyance of my mother. I found creativity everywhere. So that's where I think I've found myself even today. In 2004, I got a job offered to me here in Dubai to run a fashion store. Though that job took about 6 months for me to quit, I started on my own and I teach fashion and I teach abstract art and mixed media at the Dubai International Art Center. It's a community art center. It's one of the largest and prestigious art community centers here in Dubai. I've been the chairperson for that place for the past 7 years now. And yes, that's how I landed up in Dubai, and now it's been nearly 20 years. In my spiritual quest, I was looking for a lot of answers, and of course I had a lot of questions which was difficult to find answers to. Why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? As a child, I mean, when one should be doing all of the naughty stuff and not really bothering about these things, these were the burning questions in my life, and I had to keep asking everyone. Religion, unfortunately, didn't give me these answers, and I turned to Buddhism and found a lot of my answers in there, and I found a lot of stillness in my heart from there. Then I happened to meet Indrani Sinha. Wonderfully, I got to know that she does Life Between Lives hypnotherapy. And I thought that maybe that would kind of bring me finally to what I was really searching for. I had my first session with her. I had a breakthrough. And it's been really wonderful because I always find that when I do these sessions with her, I reach somewhere where you couldn't reach in your conscious mind, and I couldn't even hope to kind of reach it there, because she's just a wonderful, deeply spiritual person who gently takes you there without you really forcing yourself to and all of that. So I think that's where our connection is really. Today I'm seeking another session with her. I lost my father in 2017. I was very close to him and we were very bonded. Because I didn't see him, would my father not be happy about it with me? Are we really connected? Those were the questions, and I really want to reach out today and possibly hope to find those answers from him.
Rani Sinha, based in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. I'm a Life Between Lives facilitator representing Mighty Newton Institute. Life Between Lives hypnotherapy is about enabling an individual to connect to the soul's journey and going into that space between two lifetimes. And it's such a beautiful experience because you tap into understanding what you're going to be doing here, what your purpose is, why are you here, what are all those other people in your life there for. You can live your life way, way better because you've connected to your basic potential as a soul. I was born in Calcutta in the eastern part of India, and I lived there till 2006 when I moved to Dubai. My search for myself, who am I? This question that we a lot of times asking ourselves actually kicked in the year when I was turning 15. And I used to keep on questioning about, so where does the soul go? Who am I? I used to ask so many questions to my parents, which they weren't always equipped to answer. So I would turn to the teachers. And throughout my college life, I remember sitting in the cafe in a university campus with a mug of coffee and the Bhagavad Gita. I used to think maybe I'll find all my answers there. Years later, the next chapter of life began in Dubai. I learned clinical hypnotherapy in this land. I learned transpersonal regression therapy. I trained in theta healing. I dabbled with quite a few modalities which were all interconnected. But what again and again drew me was the connection between the mind and the body. I thoroughly enjoy the journey of regression, whether it is age regression, you in this lifetime going right back to the time you were in your mom's womb, and then go a little further back, the other lifetimes, the other experiences your soul has gone through. And that brought me to Michael Newton Institute. Delving into Michael's books and those amazing souls I connected with, it just felt like, oh, I know these people. There was just this instant connection. It was just so amazingly warm. There was so much of affection flowing there. Practicing Life Between Lives hypnotherapy in Dubai, representing the organization in this part of the world, I believe is part of my soul's mission. And the souls who come to me, I truly believe they seek me. I believe there is some kind of resonance somewhere, and that is why they find me. I mix all my life lessons, my personal life's journey, my own experiences, and every experience that brought any kind of pain or any kind of trauma, any kind of hardship or challenge, I'm so grateful I went through them because they each helped me to help these souls come to me today. Diali is this very beautiful woman, a lovely creative soul who I've worked with before. We've addressed some very interesting aspects of her life, and I'm very interested to see what today's session and journey is going to reveal to her as well as to me. So good to have you back, Dia. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You know, we've done these sessions on and off. I just want to know how you are, what's happening with you.
Like I mentioned, my father, he passed away in 2017. I feel that I have for a long time held on to not grieving because of who I am. I hold on to things and I don't want them to be known. But recently I've been bothered by this question that I didn't see him. I mean, I didn't see his body. Because at that time, I justified that I want to remember him the way I saw him and the way I remembered him. And I didn't want to remember him like a lifeless body, so to speak. And somehow that's bothered me and I think filled me with guilt to a large extent. Was he unhappy with me not seeing him? So that was a question that has bothered me and still bothers me. That's what brings me here. I'm hoping that you will help me.
If you remember, in your last few sessions, which were done after his passing, this is one topic you've avoided. And I want to know if there is anything that triggered you to wanting to address this today.
Yes. So, in fact, I think last year I went for a 10-day Vipassana course, which, as you know, is this intense meditation course where one has to be silent for 10 days. And it forces you to kind of go inside and into places inside of oneself where you don't allow the conscious mind to go. And I think that is what triggered me to ask these questions of myself. And I stopped myself going there because I don't want to feel vulnerable. And I think that is one of the main issues which stops me from maybe grieving or mourning or really deeply letting out my emotions, because I don't want to look or seem vulnerable.
What's the first word that comes to you when you think of the word vulnerable?
Weak. Not being able to handle things. I've been the elder one. I have to look after people. I have to be the one who's guiding people. And I have to be the one in the forefront. So how can I be someone who like kind of is in danger of falling or failing?
So it's quite a lot that we can actually look to explore in your journey today. And we don't know what the journey will open up for you.
Yeah.
No, because it's kind of percolated into your adult space where you're the giver, you're the nurturer, you're the nourisher, and you're also the one in control.
And I think that corroborates and validates who I am constantly, you know?
Yeah.
And also strengthens this feel that yes, you cannot fail. Yes, you cannot cry. Yes, you cannot be weak because other people are looking at you for support.
Hmm.
And how can they lose their support? I think that's where I'm coming from.
And today we are going to explore that I can still allow myself to do all of this and still be that strong
Diali.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my intent for you, Diali, that you possibly not be so critical of yourself.
Yeah.
And once you come to November 2017, just nod your head and let me know. Yeah. What is happening there?
I get a phone call. And it's mom to tell me about Baba. That they rushed him to the hospital. And she doesn't know what's happening. November 17 was when I lost my father. And then I traveled back to India to be with my mother, and I was all strong throughout. I have not been able to grieve my father. And again, intellectually, I do understand that I must do that grieving.
Allow that Diya, 2017 Diya, to step out and face you. See what she has to say. Listen to her. Going back and talking to that inner child, or that Diyali, that sub-personality was important. Once she and the adult could face each other, she's no longer in the shadow. Then she's enabling the rest of the session.
Should have had time. I should have held him more. I should have been a child a little bit more.
What else is she saying?
To allow myself to be loved. I will show it. It's okay to feel.
It's okay to feel.
It's okay to let go. It's okay to cry. It is love. This is the narrative I've given myself. I have to be the strong one, because if I break, then they will have no one to look up to. And I am the one. Cry. You have to be strong. You cannot pray.
Why? I cannot break the curse.
Because I have to be strong for other people.
For who?
For my mother.
My mother.
For my brother. Because if they see me break,
cannot break.
So here you have the 2017 inner child or the subpersonality of Diwali telling Diwali the adult that it's okay. It's okay for us to grieve. It's okay for us to cry. And immediately the very controlling part of her says no. So I'm already seeing at that moment that there is another aspect popping up. One is wanting, the other seeking, but there is this third element. We have to find out who it is. So when was it? In the first thought, I have to be strong for Ma and Toy.
I have this workshop.
In his workshop. How old are you?
6 years old.
6 years.
There's a Bee Gees poster.
Okay.
And it says workplace. I can see machinery. That's where we used to work.
He wouldn't allow me inside that room because that was his workplace and there are a lot of dangerous machines and stuff like that. And he was this big fan of Bee Gees at that time. So there were like two big posters, one of Bruce Lee. That day, I remember very clearly when I had got into some scrap with some people and I was crying and he dragged me to that room.
I'm crying because somebody's hit me.
Mm-hmm.
He tells me you have to be strong and you always have to be strong. Cannot let other people beat you. And you can never cry. You shouldn't cry like weak girls. You are not weak. And after that, I never cried. I wanted him to be proud of me. I wanted him to just see me as strong. And I was. When other people cried and I didn't cry, he was proud of me.
What the father does is out of love. Not realizing, has passed on a very limiting, controlling belief to the child. The child is not at the age to understand, is this good for me or not? So if the whole thing goes in, sits there and becomes part of her rule. Now, every time she's going through an experience and that rule gets triggered, she's trained to say, oh no, I have to be stoic, I have to be strong. Go back even further. You're going to a very, very young age. Tell me a significant moment.
Mother's in hospital.
Okay. How old are you?
It's just 4.
Just 4. The moment we said go to another significant moment as you're going back in time, she quickly went at the moment right after her birth.
I'm so confused.
Why are you confused?
So to be wrong. But I know my father. He's confused also. He's confused because he can't believe this has happened to him.
And how do you feel, Nizam?
I feel I've arrived. So much to do. But I feel like I have to protect my father. That's strange. I have to make sure he's happy. He's safe. Yes.
And when you see him, you're feeling all this, is it?
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm confused. I should be holding him, but he's holding me.
I should be holding him. But he's holding me.
Yeah, because I'm so soft.
Red flag for me, the therapist. That means there's something sitting here which feels like something unfinished in some other incarnation these two souls would have gone through. They're kind of taking their accounts into this lifetime to match and clear the account balance.
Breathe. Go back even further, dear. Go back. You're moving back.
My young girl.
How young?
18, maybe.
safety?
Wearing something white.
White. Look at your feet. Are you bare feet? Do you have shoes, sandals?
Bare feet.
Bare feet.
I'm on the grass somewhere.
Grass. What's your complexion like?
White. Light brown hair.
Mm-hmm. So the skin color, the feet, her surroundings, these are ways to anchor in the mind that, no, you have moved into the deeper recesses of the subconscious mind and you've gone into the primitive mind where you have all your past life files.
I can see a young boy who's next to me and I'm playing with.
Okay.
He's my son.
Look very carefully at his face, his eyes. This is one of the things I always do, is the moment you're meeting someone in another lifetime, check the eyes. Because there's usually a soul recognition.
That's my dad. Of course, it's my dad. I love him so much. He's the one I know I have to protect him.
Protect him.
You're the only one who can protect him. And he's looking up at me. It depends on me.
Depends on you. Okay, so is she a single parent? Is this a child born out of wedlock? Is there something else the matter? Because she's not claiming anyone else is there. Just move to the next significant moment. In that space, for this 18-year-old girl, what is your name?
Mary.
Mary.
And I have to go.
You have to go. Where?
I don't know where, but I have to go and I know I have to leave my son.
To leave him behind. How is that making you feel?
I'm so torn. I don't want to go.
Maybe had the child out of wedlock or something like that. These people were taking me away from my son and he was to be looked after. It's so sad.
You leave him and you go. Then what happens?
I tell him I will come back.
Ah, so you told him you will come back.
I will come back. And I will protect.
Did you come back? Mary?
No.
What happened to you?
I'm not there. He's been told his mother's died.
Pure helplessness. Powerlessness. The fact that she had promised the child, I'll come back, and she couldn't. Guilt of a parent abandoning the child.
I'm lying on the road.
Okay. Are you still in your body?
Yeah.
To your thoughts and feelings.
I'm just panicking because there's going to be no one to look after me. And no one. I'm not going to be there. And I'm still watching over him.
Still watching. Who is he with?
He's my parents. He seems happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm floating.
You're floating.
Mm-hmm.
You could clearly see that there was a slight change in her expression. Her facial muscles started to relax. So that letting go feeling was coming in.
I've reached the gate of some place.
You've reached a gate. Okay, can you describe the gate to me?
It's just a gate and it's like wide open space.
Okay.
I somehow know I've reached home.
I've reached home. What does it feel like? I've reached home, you said.
Peaceful.
Peaceful. Is there anyone there on that other side of that open gate?
My grandmother.
Your grandmother. Okay. Ancestor coming to greet you, so makes sense. She was quite a very beloved grandchild.
I had a great relationship with her. She was very, very deeply spiritual.
Well, there's another person I don't recognize. Says he's my teacher.
Your teacher? You said him. Can you describe him?
Wearing an orange shirt.
Okay.
A very gentle.
Okay.
With white hair. He says I was waiting for you. Because of all the work you've done, you're already strong. You don't have to be. This was it. Shed your armor. Be yourself.
Those three words pretty much sum up the whole session. When do you wear an armor? When you're at war or you believe you're going to be attacked. That means you're functioning from a space of fear. Her life is all about being love, feeling love, sharing love, being in the flow of love. And vulnerability is actually when you're really strong.
Mama is telling me that I've given you so much light and I'm sending you down. As a woman this time, so you can feel. He's saying I'm preparing you. For all the people you have to show love.
Here is a soul who in her discussions and dialogues is coming as a woman. So there's this whole strength thing, being strong. She's armored. She can take it all. But there's the other side of hers who's absolutely comfortable to get help from people, where people do things for her, where people are very protective towards her. Showing her softer self, showing her femininity. That's what she's come here to experience, because that also is being strong.
You have to flow. That's why I'm sending you down as a woman. As a mother. Because as a mother, you have to be soft. You have to be a mother to so many people.
Emotions are strong. Women can feel it and can express it. And not because of conditioning of society where she's allowed to express it. It's natural for her to express things because emotions are always at the topmost. She expresses and feels life with emotions.
He's saying you have to cry everybody's tears.
Cry everybody's tears.
You must cry everybody's tears. He's saying if you don't cry, you can't cry for anybody else. And it's not weakness. Oh, he's got his hand on my head. He's saying it's not weakness. Great. He's saying you're like a bird. You're always free. He's laughing and he's telling me tears are good. They're like the river that washes over you.
She's super critical about herself. What she's gifting herself today is, it's okay to feel for me. It's okay for me to cry. And it's okay if others see me cry. Because what they said was, till you don't accept your own tears, how are you going to be able to do it with others?
I can see Baba.
Oh, lovely. Baba there? Take a few moments, talk to him.
We're holding each other. He's happy. Got his hand on my head. He says he loves me. He's apologizing to me. He says, I'm sorry. I took away something from you. Like, okay, no.
I realized it today. That I think it was his thing that he was putting on to me most of the times. What he couldn't do, he would put it on to me, that I would be able to do it. And then I took it on as well. I was a willing partner to this whole thing.
In his apology to her, and therefore her apology to him, in some ways, creates closure. Why? Because they are both able to say sorry. So there's no guilt there. There's no guilt-induced belief or guilt-induced behavior patterns.
They're just telling me not to be afraid of being myself. They're telling me just create. And there's so much to do, they're telling me.
Does Baba have anything to say?
Yeah. Why are you afraid that you have to be strong? You already are. You don't have to be.
Her message isn't just for women. It's for anybody who has been taught or has been conditioned as a child that tears is equal to weakness. How long do you think it is?
2 hours at least.
So, Dia, it was actually 2.5 or I think a little more than that.
Oh, my God.
Her session is about liberating you into acknowledging your feelings, emotions, and the most important message for me, vulnerability is equal to strength. I am okay loving myself just the way I am.
It's been 2 weeks since my session. I do feel the difference. I remember how I did feel before, not allowing myself to be vulnerable and you have to be strong. But after the session, there has been a huge shift that I can visibly feel within myself. I'm not afraid anymore to be vulnerable, and it's okay to feel emotional and not weak. Emotionally, if one is stuck and you have unhealed parts of you, then I don't think you can go ahead and heal anyone else. So that was a huge thing for me, where I did heal those parts of me which were unhealed, and I can freely now go ahead and help other people, which is always my purpose. In the session where we spoke about my dad, and he did not hold any kind of grudge against me to say he didn't. He said, I was there with you all the time. And it's true, because I do feel him. And that was really wonderful. Thank you, Indrani, for this journey into my soul. I am deeply inspired, and I look forward to fulfilling my purpose in my life.
Okay, we've come to the 11:30 hour, and Rainbird, you're there, so I'm going to pass the talking stick to you.
Okay, I'll take that talking stick.
Yes, there's all kinds of feathered friends on that talking stick. The emerald fur, the serpent feathered one is there for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, thank you for tonight. What a soul-searching ending to the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And we have another day coming up here.
Indeed. I'm in it already.
You are. It's 1:30.
Yeah. Well, that's a decent hour to go to bed.
It is.
I like it. I'm resting better now. It's helping me.
That's great.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, it's good. So I'm grateful for that change, and look forward to this afternoon. And I will be doing the opening for Cheryl. She's off to a wedding in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, I know she's going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I know that we will have her spot well filled tomorrow.
Yeah, you can count on me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for all of your support, Rainbird, and opening and closing our shows for how many years now?
I don't know. decades.
Yes.
This is so.
Yeah.
I mean, when we first started, I think it was 1999 with Jennifer Lee.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what Jennifer Lee is. We're coming to the completion of this whole period of time into a new one. Let's dance, as Mother always says. We'll dance through the night.
Good night.
In your dreams. Thank you, Rainbird. And Rama, you got a little song or something?
This is Rumi. It's a mouse and a frog.
A mouse and a frog. Here we go.
A mouse and a frog meet every morning on the riverbank. They sit in a nook of the ground and talk. Each morning, the second they see each other, they open easily, telling stories and dreams and secrets, empty of any fear or suspicious holding back. To watch and listen to those two is to understand how, as it's written, sometimes when two beings come together, Christ becomes visible. The mouse starts laughing out a story he hasn't thought of in 5 years, and the telling might take 5 years. There's no blocking, the speech flow, river running, all carrying momentum that true intimacy is. Bitterness doesn't have a chance with those two. The God messenger, Khidir, touches a roasted fish. It leaps off the grill, back into the water. Friend sits by friend, and the tablets appear. They read the mysteries off each other's foreheads. But one day the mouse complains, "There are times when I want sobet, and you're out in the water, jumping around where you can't hear me. We meet at this appointed time, but the text says, lovers pray constantly, once a day, once a week. 5 times an hour is not enough. Fish like we are need the ocean around us. Do camel bells say, let's meet back here Thursday night? Ridiculous. They jingle together continuously, talking while the camel walks. Do you pay regular visits to yourself? Don't argue or answer rationally. Let us die. And dying, reply.
Until we meet again, everybody, see you in the afternoon of this day ahead. 2:30 Mountain Time, 4:30 Eastern Time, and everything in between. Sat Nam.
Sat Nam Ji.
13 thank yous, honey in the heart, no evil. Live long and prosper, everyone. Aloha. Aloha.